97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Reardon KFTK and Instagram at Mark Talk. You're listening to the Mark Reardon Show.
A lot of times you can listen to the Mark Reardon Show on a YouTube channel, but we have been challenged on that front because we've had some technology changes here, Sue, and some of the listeners have been frustrated that they can't access the show. We're frustrated, too. We're trying to work it out.
We are, but in the meantime, and people have said, where can we find you? You can find us on the Twitter, which is now X. So you can watch us there. And it's the live feed, same thing that you would see on YouTube. It just happens to be on X.
Yeah. If you go to at 97.1 FM Talk, you can always follow me at Mark Reardon, KFTK, and I link to that every day. So that's an option. We hope to have this settled. Here's some good news for us. Trish Everding, who is essentially the person who runs the show here at 97.1 FM Talk.
Yes.
Our boss, Steve Moore, has delegated a lot of responsibility to Trisha. She's assistant program director of the station. And really, we depend on her so much.
Yes.
When she's back next week, because we've had, look, since Trisha's been gone, Abby left the show.
Yeah.
And Ethan has been now taken over in that position. So we're trying to get that figured out. It's frustrating to us as well. We've had a bunch of different kinks to work out, and we do apologize. And then I have a listener that hit me on Twitter that said, Mark, how many times do you plan on calling J.D. Vance, J.D. Walls on your show today?
Oh, whoops.
I had no idea. I hope I didn't do it more than like twice. Did I? Did you hear me do it?
I did not. Well, I need to tune back in.
I said to the listener is that the brain has been particularly challenged this week. I'm not exactly sure why either.
Sometimes it happens.
I'm not like sleep deprived or anything like that,
yeah.
But you know,
sometimes it happens.
Does happen. Kilmeade's coming up here. We're getting him on the line. Chris Clem at the bottom of the hour. He is the former Yuma Sector Border Patrol Chief. Some of the things related to the border were discussed at the debate last night, and we'll get with Chris on that. Plus, an audio cut of the day. Steve Cortez tomorrow at 3:25 weighing in on politics. And then, of course, we do have the Reardon Roundtable set for Friday with Jane, State Rep Steve Butts, and Gene Evans all on the panel in the 3 o'clock hour. I think we got Brian on the line. Kilmeade, how are you this afternoon?
I'm all good. How are you, Mark?
I'm good. We had plenty to talk about here with what happened last night, but I got to start because I heard you earlier talking about taking phone calls this morning. I got to start with Helene.
This is like a Katrina on steroids.
We have people on oxygen that are completely out now. We're only provided a single 12-hour tank at most. We have babies up there with no formula. Nothing.
Brian, there's nothing more important in this country right now than these people in North Carolina and other places. I thought J.D. Vance should have canceled the debate or postponed it last night. Said, look, we're going to North Carolina to help people, you know, people in Appalachia. And I'm just curious what the sentiment was and how many people were calling this morning on your radio show just desperate for some help, too.
Yeah, we got a few of them desperate and other people with friends in the area. And it's a bunch of smaller towns in the mountains. And the thing is Michael Walsh just brought up, he said, we got Fort Bragg right there. Don't tell me that they can't handle that terrain. They do. They train for it every day. Utilize the National Guard. Get our army into those woods. Go save people. We got so many helicopters. What do you mean you have a no-fly zone? Not for our military, you know.
I'm stunned by it. I mean, honestly, get helicopters loaded up with water, oxygen tanks. I don't care what you have to do. Someone needs to be running the show. So this is another one of those things where it's disappointing on the part of the federal government. And this is where government really needs to play a role. So, and you know, one thing I will say, and this is why philosophically I get involved with a lot of charities, and I love Samaritan's Purse, Brian. I've worked with them for years. I've heard people on Fox talking about how great Samaritan's Purse has been, just getting people supplies and things that they need, which is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, they were ahead of the game. Remember, Trump was there right away, set up a GoFundMe page. When I was doing Outnumbered, it was at $3.9 million. I imagine it's over that. So he says, I have supplies with me. And then you got people that are volunteering to use their helicopters, and they're saying, no, you're not allowed. Where's this president? Well, we're doing everything we can. What do you mean you're doing everything you can? This is our country. This
yeah.
is in the middle of nowhere. So it's. I'm really curious. Now, look, people have pointed out they were told to evacuate, that it was going to be dangerous. No one believed it because it never happened before. So many people are still there that didn't have to be victims or challenged right now. But that's for later down the line.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm sure you've seen some of these videos, too, that are circulating. They're just heartbreaking with people rolling down. It's not even a river. It's sometimes just a street that became a river. So I hope that the response improves. I suppose when it comes to last night, this sums up a lot.
I've not been perfect, and I'm a knucklehead at times.
I couldn't believe his answer on that. I mean, he is a serial embellisher, if not liar. He got caught on that one with Tiananmen Square, and that answer was just a joke. And of course, he wasn't really fact-checked on that too aggressively, was he?
Well, yeah, that was okay. We're over. We did that. Let's just keep moving. Tiananmen Square. By the way, Tom Cotton told me in the break, I mentioned this on the show. He said, you know, his answer. So he misstated that he was not there at Tiananmen Square, but he was a few months later. Easy to get out of that. There was still protests going on after that. People don't realize it. So I kind of blended in my mind all the one. Bottom line is the message is pretty clear. The Chinese were in for they're playing for keeps. They looked it up as the enemy, and they would not be ever allowed free speech. Well, whatever you concluded from that, just move on from it. But, well, I was born in Maine. I used to ride a bike with my friends. People know me in the community.
Yeah.
I mean, that was as bad as I grew up in a middle-class family.
Look, there were moments at the beginning of this thing last night with Tim Walz where it was so cringy, and I thought, what are we in for? Now, I will say, I think that he kind of, you know, got things together to a certain extent, and, you know, wasn't as bad in the second half. But of course, then the moderators, let's talk about that, because the second question is climate change. And then Nora has to come in and kind of spike the ball there and tell everyone how the experts are always right on this stuff. And, you know, they're not satisfied with anything J.D. Vance says. So they have to put that into qualification. He says you're not supposed to live fact check. And Tim Walz says that, too. But I see headlines today about J.D. Vance only whining about that, Brian. So double standards everywhere, I think.
Yeah, but I just think that we've almost looked past it. It's almost as like I expect the refs to be bad.
Yes.
I expect the ump to be off. And, you know, bottom line is I think it's built in. It's not nearly as bad. Why? Because you had an extremely, extremely well-prepared, battle-tested 39-year-old. And I'm sorry if I repeat it from my radio show, but if you just think about it, he had to compete hard with four people to get the nomination. Then he had to repeat against Tim Ryan. This is just to be a senator. And then he goes and does these Sunday shows, and these people are reluctant because they thought they had this Democrat, this Ron Howard produces a movie on him, Hollywood embraces him, and then all of a sudden he abandons MSNBC and these guys and goes with Trump. So everybody he goes to interview is fighting with him, all building to this moment where things got tough, and he thought, well, what time is it? Everything's been tough for 4 years. So... And the other thing would be he had sometimes he would do four Sunday shows in a row, and they were rougher than that. And one was really tough with Margaret Brennan.
Yes.
So he understands the tone. He understands the condescension. He knows her style of Mark Reardon. Yeah, you're wrong, but don't worry about it. We'll move on. Excuse me. No. Just what Nora O'Donnell said. Well, scientists say the Earth has never heated up like it is right now. So all scientists agree. But we'll move on. No, excuse me. What do you mean move on? I'm not going to move on. That's not true. So he's used to it.
Well, and you know, I heard people in the aftermath. I heard a couple of people on CNN, maybe even people previewing the debate saying, well, J.D. Vance is the built-in advantage. He's the guy who's polished here. This Walz guy has been in politics for 20-plus years, right? He knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Would he win four congressional elections, including an upset against an established candidate, then he wins two governorships? See, he is much more experienced. He knows his way around. He has no idea about foreign policy. I don't think he's interested in it, although there's an interesting pattern. If you look at what Chinese like to do, they like to get unknown Congress people that have potential or that would just have a vote, and they like to win them over. And you don't know what kind of candidate he is because he doesn't speak about why he would go to China 30 times. Why would he go on his honeymoon there?
So in the end here, because I think that most people would agree, and I called it like I said, saw it the last time. I think you did too. Trump did awful, but J.D. Vance did great last night. I thought he was awesome. Now he stumbled a little bit, and I think that he had his own crutches with the host, where he would say, "Look, first off, what would he say? Look, first off, something like that." It was the crutch. We all have crutches, right, Brian? But right. In the end, will it make a difference? Will it move the needle? The focus group seemed to think that Vance did better. I don't know if it moves the needle.
I do because. Number one, it shows that Trump made a good pick. And number two, can he make a decision? Yes. Can he understand Trump? Can he explain him instead of can he explain him and defend him? It's easy to defend. This is what he meant. But actually, he feels like Trump has got this own way of doing things, and he agrees with him. So he fully understands what he's saying. And if he knows that, look, you and I also know January 6th was an abomination. I have no problem saying that. The MAGA people do. And I would say that just not admitting that you lost the election, even with the odd situations built into certain states and cities with the pandemic. But these people can't.
Yeah.
If you're with Trump, that you can never admit that you lost the election.
Yeah, I don't like that. So, you know, and I don't think that works very well with most people in the country. I'm not a big stolen election guy, and I think that was one of the moments that did not work last night for J.D. Vance. Let's kind of move to the Middle East here in what happened with Iran, because they didn't do much damage, seemingly, and they've gotten themselves into a situation where definitely Israel is going to respond and retaliate at this point. So where does this take us, Brian?
I think they're going to bomb out. Hopefully it's a nuclear sites. I don't know why we're so afraid. Joe Biden coming out saying, I'm not for bombing the nuclear sites. They're weeks away from getting a nuclear weapon. You keep saying they're not going to get one. They started a war in the region through Hamas, Hezbollah, and their own actions. The second massive bombing. They deserve this. They're our ally. Israel, I'm in awe of what they've been able to accomplish with intelligence and actual execution. Let them do it. Back them up. And let's this cancer in the Middle East. Just notice, nobody's coming to Iran's aid. Nobody's saying that Israel should back off except the United Nations. The Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, all these nations, Jordan, Egypt, no one's demanding they don't do anything because they know Iran is the problem in the region.
There's so much going on right now. You have North Carolina completely underwater. Obviously, the rest of the Southeast in some trouble. Israel under siege. And now the American supply chain under threat with this port strike, which I think is very significant. Most people probably don't even know what's going on here, Brian. And is it something that should be intervened in by the administration?
They should have been there earlier. This administration is a shell of itself. They all went to the campaign. They're not even executing as a government. They had to execute to get ahead of this massive strike, biggest one in 20 years, and they had to execute with this calamity of the hurricane, second worst in our history. Neither one they're equipped to, neither one they're even trying for. You don't even have an aggressive chief of staff.
You know what? I couldn't even tell you who the hell the damn chief of staff is right now the top of my head, honestly.
Yeah, and they said, oh, Jeff, why don't you go handle the negotiations? It's too late. They're already on strike.
You know, it wasn't too long ago where you had White House chiefs of staff that were a pretty big part of the daily functioning of the White House, and people would get to know them. I know it's early. It's only Wednesday. What do you got coming up on Saturday night?
Michael Walter, thank you. Michael Walter will definitely be on with us. Chris Sununu will definitely be in. We're looking at someone in the Trump campaign. We're going to have a position out in Butler. I'm going to be live. So we're going to wait for the Butler event as the president goes back to the site of his assassination. How many people would do that? He does it within this campaign. So I think that's going to be pretty dramatic. And we're just working. Tommy Lahren will be with us breaking down the media moments that matter. So that's a pretty good start, I think. General Jack Keane. I'm going to look at 2024, the supply chain, and I'm going to be talking about Butler.
Yeah, no lack of topics. Kilmeade, thank you so much. Have a great week.
Go get him, Mark. Thanks.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Of course, you hear him every morning here on 97.1 FM Talk, and we're talking about his show at 8 p.m. on Central One Nation on the Fox Network. One of the things that I did not get a chance to talk about, we got Chris Klemm coming up here talking about the border and some of the things that were discussed during the debate last night, but I had several listeners that reached out wondering if I was going to discuss this, and oh yes, we are. We'll bring it up on the roundtable on Friday. This was a story that was in the local paper yesterday. I love the way that this is even written, Sue, so you have to, and I think some of this is because you got newbie reporters or people who don't have experience, but it doesn't even seem like it's a very journalistically sound written article, which I guess shouldn't come as a surprise. St. Louis, that's here. City Hall should cut checks to black residents as reparations for slavery and anti-black discrimination, a city panel has decided.
Oh,
that's
great.
The first line of the story. But Sue, the Reparations Commission isn't planning to say how much recipients should get, leaving a key issue up in the air as the group prepares to send final recommendations to Tisch on October 7th. This is the biggest joke.
Yeah,
it always has been a big joke. That this is given any serious consideration is outrageous. It really is. That the Post-Dispatch or media organizations would cover this without casting questions about the legitimacy of it. And let's just talk about the money that's involved here. And I know Jane's going to probably pop off on this on Friday, too. We still have, and I can't believe that there's not more pressure. This is where you do need journalists, right?
Yes.
You have $250 million that's part of the Rams settlement money that hasn't been touched. You have a big portion of the $500 ARPA money that hasn't been touched. What the hell are they going to do with it? And by the way, this is not money that's set aside for reparations. And the story in the Post says the Volunteer Commission, you know, this group of idiots that's gotten together deciding that this is the way to spend money, send checks to black people in the city of St. Louis. For what? I don't know. They say none of the money has been set aside for reparations, and they don't have power to make spending decisions. So the person who runs this panel is quoted as saying, we are wrestling with the fact that there absolutely must be cash payments. They don't want cash payments, right? And also that we're not sure what or where that will come from because we can't guarantee that will happen. So they sound like they're all buttoned up on things.
Yeah, that's great.
With this. It's just, you know, it's even more outrageous when you're talking about California where they weren't even a slave state. But I've been confused by this discussion ever since it started decades ago. And there's, you know, the analogies that they use as far as the Japanese in internment camps, it's just not the same. No. And we can come to terms with the fact that we had horrific instances of racism in this country. But I think we can also come to terms with the fact that the country has evolved significantly. We do so every decade. And we've gone forward outside of the last decade, because in the last decade, we had defund the police and we had Mike Brown and we had all this other stuff with George Floyd. So now race relations have gone back in the other direction, thanks to progressives. But the answer to the question about how you solve some of this, what would this actually do, Sue? What would it do?
Nothing.
Doesn't do anything.
You know, I love the Thomas Sowell quote about this, that reparations is the extraction of money from people who have never been slave owners and given to people who have never been slaves.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He nailed it.
And he says, if you were to give reparations to everyone whose ancestors had been slaves, I suspect that you would have to give reparations to more than half the entire population of the globe.
Well, that's a valid point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so ludicrous that this is even, I mean, for this city in particular, with the challenges that we have with crime, with economic development, with leadership, for one second to be spent on a panel that considers reparations is just embarrassing. And why there's not more pressure on Tisch to decide, or at least to show some leadership when it comes to spending some of this money on things outside of beautifying the intersections and the streets, because that's what she's talked about. You know, the other thing I was thinking about today, Sue, and I've actually been thinking about this quite a bit because I drive by here all the time. It was, let's Google this real quick. Do you remember when Kamala Harris was here last year?
Oh, I don't. When they did the whole City Hall thing and closed it down for construction the lawn.
So let's see here. Vice President Kamala Harris, October. Oh, look at this. This was October 6th of last year. So essentially, this Friday is the 1 year anniversary. And I bring that up because at that time, you had homeless encampments that were in Pelker Park. Pelker Park is right across here from where we are at 97.1 FM Talk, and at City Hall and at the dilapidated courts building, which is just to the west of City Hall. So you had all these fancy tents out there that didn't look like they were, you know, organized at all, were they, by Larry Rice,
nope,
et cetera. And they're pooping and peeing everywhere and doing drugs and all that. So Kamala comes to town, and what do? They put gates around Pelker Park. They put gates around City Hall and the courts building. That stuff is still in place. I did a Freedom of Information request with the city of St. Louis, and I asked them, what in the world are you doing with Pelker Park? Because you have it all gated off. And the answer they gave me, which is just ludicrous, is, well, you know, we had to seed the lawn and we're waiting for the bare spots to fill in. It's taken a year, apparently, for the bare spots to move in. I'm the only person that cares about this because no one else wants to talk about it. But here's also what's interesting. That park is shut down to taxpaying residents of the city of St. Louis. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to go to that park right now, in theory, I couldn't use it. I mean, I'm just going to tear the gate down and go in there. But lo and behold, when Pride Fest was a thing in June, oh, they opened up the park and they let the Pride people. Then a couple of weeks ago, I don't even know what was going on. There was some sort of corporate event that was right down here. Oh, they opened up the gates and let people go in there. But if you're a taxpayer, if you just want to hang out in a park, you might get shot, of course. You can't use that park. So it is, you know, maybe this isn't the biggest issue that faces the city of St. Louis. I would stipulate. But Sue, are they just going to leave it there forever?
It's a valid question, Mark. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, that's my point. So it's a small issue, but it's sort of is symbolic of the ineptitude of the leadership in the city of St.
Agreed.
Louis. That's what I would say. Chris Klemm coming up. Am I the king of nothing at all? Audio cut of the day coming up here before the end of the show. This happened at the debate last night, talking about the border.
Look, I think what Tim said just doesn't pass the smell test. For 3 years, Kamala Harris went out bragging that she was going to undo Donald Trump's border policy. She did exactly that. We had a record number of illegal crossings. We had a record number of fentanyl coming into our country. And now that she's running for president, or a few months before, she says that somehow she got religion and cared a lot about a piece of legislation. The only thing that she did when she became the vice president, when she became the appointed border czar, was to undo 94 Donald Trump executive actions that opened the border. This problem is leading to massive problems in the United States of America. Parents who can't afford health care, schools that are overwhelmed. It's got to stop, and it will when Donald Trump is president.
You know, despite the interjections from the moderators, it was once again 3-on-1 last night for J.D. Vance. I think the American people kind of get this border issue right now. I think they understand
who to
blame. I really do. Chris Klemm is back with us, former Yuma Sector Border Patrol chief. I'm sure he has reactions to what happened last night. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good afternoon, everybody. Good to be back on the show.
A couple things I wanted to ask you, because the thing that keeps being said over and over again is, you know, this is President Trump's fault that this border situation is like this. They had this bipartisan bill that was just perfect. It would have solved everything. And it's his fault. It's not the Democrats' fault. How do you react to that one, Chris?
Well, it's just another batch of blatant lies from this administration and the Democrats. Let's set the record straight. And I'm glad you asked this question. And, let's talk about House Bill H.R. 2 was the only border bill that's been passed in recent months and years. It was passed by the House. It's been sitting in the Senate for 20 months. But let me talk about what is in. I got 6 points right off the top of my head. In that 370-page bipartisan bill, and I put quotes up when I said that because it really wasn't anything,
yeah,
there was zero mention of how to combat child and human trafficking. Zero. There was $1.4 billion of your taxpayer money going to non-government organizations to shuttle and shelter aliens in your communities. There was specific language that prohibited the money from this bill to go to technology, that is, that was part of the previous 2020 border security plan. So they didn't want us to reenact that. There was direct release of certain aliens, because they say, it was going to end catch and release. No, there was actually language in there that said certain aliens would be released and given work authorization. That impacts U.S. citizens trying to get jobs and legal residents. There was also a part of that bill that said no less than 1,400 people a day will be processed. These are inadmissible aliens that arrive at the port of entry, no less than 1,400 a day to be processed and allowed into the country. And then lastly, one of the things off the top of my head is there was a sunset clause, because the Democrats say, this would have fixed it. It basically said all the authorizations, emergency enforcement authorizations would sunset after 3 years of the bill being enacted. You don't hear a single Democrat. You don't hear Harrison Waltz talking about that. That's why that bill was dead on arrival, because when the public saw the text, nobody wanted to get behind it, but they use it as a talking point. Those are facts. You can read it in the bill.
Don't they make the claim, too, that the Border Patrol Union liked the bill or supported the bill, but aren't they also supporting President Trump?
Yeah, so there was a section in the bill, right, when they initially started this out. Remember, when they act like in the union supported it, it was the increase in overtime pay for agents. Obviously, any union is going to back increase in funding for their agents, even though the agents don't want to work overtime to process and release people. There was that piece, and there was an increase in detention. But when they got wind of the bill, they quickly said, no, we're not behind this thing, because Chuck Schumer would not authorize an amendment process. He would not put that through. So the Border Patrol said, no, we're not behind this at all. Because, again, you start a bill, you add things to it, you give and take through amendments. Schumer wasn't going to do it. He was trying to ram it down the throat. So the Border Patrol Union backed out their support, because they weren't listening to the experts on the ground. They were just trying to figure it out themselves.
All right, I want to get your reaction. This was one of the most interesting moments of the debate last night, where they cut the mics at the end, but J.D. Vance was trying to get, you know, the clarification in about the truth of what's happening in Springfield, Ohio.
The people that I'm most worried about in Springfield, Ohio are the American citizens who have had their lives destroyed by Kamala Harris's open border.
Just to clarify for our viewers, Springfield, Ohio does have a large number of Haitian migrants who have legal status, temporary protected status.
Well, Margaret, but
thank you, Senator. We have so much to get to.
Margaret, I think it's important
because we're going to turn out of the debate, economy.
Yeah, they wanted to shut him down, but he didn't stop.
You guys are going to fact check, and since you're fact checking me, I think it's important to say what's actually going on.
Thank you, Senator, for describing the legal process. We have so much to get to, Senator.
Those laws have been on the books since 1990.
All right, so Chris, I want you to kind of explain what J.D. Vance was trying to get across last night about the process, because he had a great line about how this is Kamala's magic wand, and technically they make these claims about the migrants being legal because they have the temporary status, right?
Yeah, so they're abusing, once again, they're abusing TPS, temporary protective status. What that has been designed for, and through my experience from day one, it was a lot of Central Americans back in the early part of my career, but what that was if you were a non-citizen, whether you were here legally and your visa expired, or you were here illegally and you were in the United States, and you were from a country that was experiencing some kind of chaos, right? Whether it's, you know, political, military, natural disaster, and we weren't going to send you back to a country that was in war or in turmoil because there was an earthquake or political infighting that was causing, you know, a risk. We would give a limited in scope temporary protective status, meaning you were not going to be removed and deported. What has happened, especially with the Haitians, is they are allowing them to enter illegally and then giving them TPS, right? So, I mean, not all of them. Some of them have been here for a long time that are given that TPS, but she is using that as kind of a catch-all. It's almost like you rob a bank, you get the money, you get caught, you get charged, you get released. Then they go ahead, the bank it fills out the loan for you and gives you the money anyway. It basically says, oh, yeah, we're just going to dismiss all that, because that's what's happened. They've allowed people to come in illegally, pull factor, that's saying, hey, we're going to let you stay here. Then they give them the temporary protective status, and that is what's causing this huge draw.
Absolutely.
And you cannot pick and choose countries and say, oh, we're going to do it to them just for them. Nothing's changed. I mean, yes, Haiti's had some issues, but it's not limited to – you know, something that he can't resolve. But let me just say one more thing on this. This is, again, par for the course under this administration to find one little nuance, one little gray area and say, oh, how can we exploit it? So tell all the Haitians that are south of the border from South America, Central America, and Mexico, if you get here, we'll give you a TPS.
Yeah, come on up.
That's
right.
That's what's happening. And they're calling that legal. It's actually an abuse of a legal executive authority, which is what this administration has been really good at.
So one of the other topics that came up last night, this gets discussed quite a bit, Chris Klemback with us, former Yuma Sector Border Patrol Chief, is the issue of mass deportations. Overwhelming portion of people in this country support that. Certainly overwhelming number of Republicans, but even a majority of Democrats support deportations. Obviously, Chris, it would be tough to execute something like that. They tried to pin J.D. Vance on that last night. But what's your answer to the deportation question?
Well, I think Senator Vance got it right. We start with the criminals right there. We know that there is a large, well, we just saw ICE release stats, 425,000 criminal aliens out there with some 13,000 murders and 15,000 sexual assault subjects. So we can go and identify them. Our state and local know where they're hiding out. ICE probably has a good idea where to find them. We target that group first. Every American should be able to get behind, and we want to get rid of the criminals. Then you go after those that have pending warrants of removal that never, you know, they went through the immigration process, didn't go see the judge, or failed to appear, and the judge removed them in absentia. We can go after those two sections right there. Then we can also offer up opportunities for, like, these people that have been paroled in or have TPS and say, hey, you got to get out. You could really go after a large chunk of the unlawful, illegal population here without, you know, having to create a stir and you know, that is, I think, what Americans can go after. The Democrats and the mainstream media are going to say, oh, well, they're going to go rip, you know, kids away from their families at quinceañeras and things like that. No, we're going to target the criminals. We're going to target the ones that are exploiting people. We're going to target the ones that have been abusing the system by not following judges' orders. I think you do that, that sends the message. It also starts cleaning up our immigration legal system and enforcement system to get it back to where we need to go. But it all starts with closing the border and targeting the ones that are here that have committed the crime.
Now, Chris, on the ICE numbers in particular, look, the legacy media has tried to go out of their way here, even though these numbers came out. They were released by ICE in response to a letter from Congressman Tony Gonzalez down in Texas. And Gonzalez publishes this letter. It shows how you have an amazing number of immigrants with criminal records being tracked by ICE but not detained. So that number gets out there. Trump and J.D. Vance start talking about it. People like me start talking about it. The legacy media, though, says, wait a second. And here's the CBS headline. Trump and allies mischaracterize data on immigrants with criminal convictions. Here's context on what the numbers actually show. Now, Chris, as you probably know, one of the things that they're trying to do here is say, look, because the numbers are real, it's just not the last 4 years when Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have been there. This has gone on for a while, and that's how the numbers are so high. But they try to put context in because now apparently context is necessary with this White House.
Yeah, so I looked at some numbers that were through August. I think there have been over 52,000 criminals arrested under by Border Patrol in under this administration compared to 21,000 arrested under the 4 years of under Trump. So, you know, yeah, criminal aliens are not new. The number, yeah, goes back several decades, but let me just explain this. When you turn off the interior enforcement, when you try to defund ICE, who does our interior enforcement, when you, you know, defund the detention capabilities that ICE has, you they're allowing, this administration is allowing that population to continue to wander and roam around the country. This is unacceptable. And guess what? You know, whether Trump had an opportunity or Obama had an opportunity or it goes back to Bush, you know what? You're the president and vice president now. You own this. You don't get to say, well, that was this wasn't just my problem. No,
well,
you never answered the call right now, because we were going after people that were criminals under the Trump administration. We even went after them in the first part of the Obama administration. So, you know, to sit there and ignore it and try to, oh, redirect it, it doesn't matter. If you know that there are 13,000 illegal aliens that are murder suspects,
yeah, you know, do something about it, right?
You could actually win some points by all Americans if they were to target that group.
Now, one of the things that happens here, though, isn't it that you have countries like China and Venezuela in particular, they don't want people back, right? So they refuse to accept some of these people, and then ICE just turns them loose.
Yeah, that's part of the problem, right? So, you know, the foreign policy expert that sits in the White House, at least self-claimed foreign policy expert, doesn't know how to negotiate with these countries to take their own citizens back. So you do have situations where you can't, you know, indefinitely detain people. So they have to come up with these alternative solutions. So there is that factor in. But I'm telling you, if you had a murder suspect, someone that was convicted of murder that is a non-citizen, I would allow the courts to challenge me on that one. That is in public interest to not let that person go. And you know what? If they would have released this information and been transparent, Congress could have, you know, codified something in a bill that says we will allow indefinite detention under, you know, these limited circumstances when a country will not accept them back. And, you know, and again, it all comes down to if it's legal through legislation and we can make it constitutionally whole to protect Americans, then I think it could sustain a challenge. But they're not even trying that because they didn't want this information out there.
You know, Chris, just to close here, we have a terrible situation from here in St. Louis. You probably heard about it. And the guy that is responsible for this was actually in court today. You had an illegal named Ramon Chavez Rodriguez who was drunk and hit a St. Louis police officer a couple of weeks ago and killed him when he was stopped at a different traffic incident. It's just awful.
Yeah. The irony, right, that here is one of our brave men and women that wear the uniform out there doing their job, upholding the laws and executing the oath he took, and then somebody is not even supposed to be here who is violating our laws, number one, by being here illegally, and then drinking and driving or whatever he was under the influence of and killed one of our police officers. I mean, that is just – this is unfortunately a story that has played out in almost
far
all
too
50
often.
States.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
It's just incredible, and my heart goes out because, again – We know when we took that oath that our life would be on the line, and we did it knowing that could happen, that we may not come home. But when it happens in a senseless crime by, you know, a drunk driver, especially one that's not even supposed to be here, it just makes it so much more difficult to handle.
Yep, absolutely. Chris, you're always awesome on this. Thank you so much for jumping on here this afternoon. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks for having me on. Look forward to the next time.
Yeah, thank you. And that guy was in court today, and his attorney, Sean Goulet, says that they're not going to ask the judge to release him on bond because there were holds from ICE anyway and from St. Charles County. And then he said this. He goes, look, non-citizen defendants have rights in this country, too. Justice will work its way through. No one will get a free pass, but they shouldn't be vilified in the news. Well, yes, they should in this situation. Good way to end the show, right?
Yeah.
Soon. I love the Mavericks,
love,
and we're very disappointed that they're not here this year because they come to St. Louis all the time. I will tell you, it's one of the best live acts you will ever see.
Yes.
And I haven't seen a date this year, so that's a little disappointing. I'm actually just putting together the bumper music list for the day, and I post that on the X formerly Twitter, at Mark Reardon, KFTK. I don't have a lot of time, and it's good that I don't have a lot of time because I had something very special pointed out or picked out here for audio cut of the day, so let's just get to it here.
Stand by.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
You know, I was thinking about this. I have options. I had a lot of stuff from last night. Really, there's only one thing that could be possible for audio cut of the day, and here it is.
Not been perfect, and I'm a knucklehead at times.
There it is. It's the knucklehead line from Tim Walz, which is just perfect. And as we just bump in with the Mavericks, I'm looking at the clock, Sue. I got to bump back out and say goodnight. We'll see you tomorrow at 3.
You got it.
Have a great night.